Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, April 3rd, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll find out about this Thursday's Early Learning Fair. We'll talk with visiting musician Dave Stancliffe from Tok here for the Alaska Folk Festival. We'll get an update about the Juneau Police Department with Chief Bryce Johnson. And we'll learn about the Disney Sing-Along Jam fundraising dinner. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live and local right here on a Juneau Afternoon. Currently 46 degrees in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Advocates, tribal leaders, and policymakers in New Mexico are seeking ways to stop violence against Native women and children. Advocates say one way they're tackling the issue is by changing the conversation about violence, because it's often a tough subject to address in tribal communities. Delana Otherbull is the executive director of the Coalition to Stop Violence Against Native Women.
I think what we're really trying to do is creatively mobilize our communities around health and wellness and conversation, and really looking at how do we share space together, how do we be in relationship with each other without really talking about domestic violence. Domestic violence is still very taboo in our communities, and so we're looking at creative ways to bring people into that conversation where they don't feel uncomfortable.
Other Bull says some tribal communities are changing the conversation by hosting events such as sexual assault awareness walks, which she says brings together community members in a way to engage in healthy activity. Santo Domingo Pueblo Governor Robert Corries has long worked in the social services field. He says along with changing the conversation comes listening to community members and continued work with law enforcement and prosecutors.
We've seen so many cases that come through, and once the perpetrator comes back to the community, they actually come back to the same household. We remove the victims and not the perpetrator. So changing the conversation. I just had a conversation with one of the U.S. attorneys, and we talked about jurisdiction. Outsiders being able to get away, that has to stop. Due to lack of funding, we are releasing certain individuals that have domestic violence cases, whether it's against a household member or partner, spouse. So there's a lot of learning to do.
Corries was among attendees at the Coalition's annual Tribal Leader Summit, which was held last week in Albuquerque. Areas of the Navajo Nation do not have running water, and there's also concern about drinking water safety. As Laurel Morales reports, St. Michael's School for Kids in Arizona is one such place.
St. Michael's Association for Special Education was built for kids with the most severe disabilities on the Navajo Nation. Jim Connor is the education director.
We have a lot of medically fragile children here at our school. A lot of them are fed through gastrostomy tubes, so their food has to be prepared and blended with water at every feeding.
The staff and students blend food, drink, and clean medical equipment with bottled water, which Connor says gets expensive. But they bathe, wash dishes, and do laundry with tap. Valencia Woody's son, 8-year-old Damian David, has come to St. Michael's for 4 years now. Woody, who also works at the school, says the water is a problem.
Yeah, it has a certain stench to it. Sometimes you'll smell like kind of like a egg smell. Sometimes it's yellow, brown, or even we've seen black.
The Navajo Tribal Utility Authority says it can only afford to reach the minimal drinking water standards. Dig Deep, a Los Angeles-based nonprofit, says it can do better. It's raising money to build a water filtration system for St. Michael's this summer. The first task? See if the poor water has corroded the plumbing so badly that it needs to be replaced. For National Native News, I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
The chairman of the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians discussed challenges and highlighted tribal successes during his annual State of the Band address, which was held Friday in Red Lake, Minnesota. Darrell Tsiki says economic development and job creation are among priorities. He highlighted a number of projects in areas of gaming, healthcare, and solar energy. The tribe's working on strengthening the economy by building roads, bridges, and expanding communication capabilities and enhancing emergency preparedness. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 3rd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. In the studio now are some folks we're going to be talking about this Thursday's Early Learning Fair. And I have Joy Lyon. She's the ED of AEYC. Welcome to the show, Joy.
Thanks, Scott.
And Claire Geldof. She's a Juno, she's a nurse at the Juno Public Health Center. Welcome to the show, Claire.
Thanks, Scott. Hello, Juno.
All right. So before we talk about this fair too much on Thursday from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Valley Public Library. AEYC put this together, right, Joy?
Well, we put it together in with all of our partners. So we have 20 different early childhood organizations, and we come together every month and work together to solve problems for, you know, children and families together. So AEYC provides the host, the staffing support, and that kind of thing. But it really, this early learning fair and a lot of the activities we'll talk about today are really partnership for the whole community working together, which is really a really neat thing about Juno, is that people do all really care about our children, and we really are really good at working together.
So. And remind us the acronym AEYC.
AEYC stands for the Association for the Education of Young Children. So we promote high-quality early learning for all children birth to eight by supporting parents and early learning programs and helping coordinate efforts like this.
Okay. So. You want to tell us about some of the other partners that will be at this fair? So it's this Thursday, right?
This Thursday, and it's out at the Mennett Hall Library from 4:30 to 6:30. And so it's a whole bunch of partners, including, well, the Imagination Library will have a table there and be giving away books, and the Juno School District, Juno Youth Services, Parks and Rec, the Juno Public Health and the Public Library, obviously, and the Juno Montessori Borealis and Sea Alaska Heritage, Search Gentle, Tlingit Nahida Head Start, Thread, and the Flying Lions Vision Screening Team, to mention just a few. So we'll all be there. So this is a really easy time to come and just find out about everything that's happening for children and really get signed up for everything, because the school district will be there to sign up kids, you know, to tell kids about kindergarten. A lot of parents, you know, we find are like, well, when is my child going to start kindergarten? When is the cutoff? And it's like, oh, which school will my child go to? And so this is a really good time to come and learn. If you have a child that's turning 5 by September 1st, you can come and learn all about kindergarten. And the registration day is April 13th, so the following week. So this is kind of like getting ready for kindergarten registration day. And so the school district will be there, and they will have maps, and, you know, parents will know then what to bring, which includes your immunization records and birth certificate. And they'll be really sure about which different alternate programs there are, because there's also the Montessori Borealis program and the charter school and the Tlingit immersion program. So they can hear about those as well to know if there's different options they want to sign up for.
Okay. And you've mentioned immunizations a few times. That's where you come in, right, Claire?
That's me.
Okay. What kind of immunizations are kids 3 through 5 their parents be thinking about?
Oh, so the kind of short answer to your question, most kindergartners or children entering kindergarten are looking at receiving their measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, as well as their varicella vaccine. And then they might need a few more additional ones depending on where the child is at. So that would be great if people had their vaccine records available, that we can look at those. We also do have a way that I could look up records for a statewide database, but it would be preferable to have families bring in their own.
And you'll be doing these on-site?
We will. We'll be on-site, and it's convenient, I think, for families because we're there, and we're amazing nurses, and they get a book, and it's a great way to help get them set up as well. In addition to vaccines, we also have free hearing and vision screenings that will be available through Klinkit and HIDA, the Parents as Teachers program, and the Flying Lions volunteer support team. So that'll be a really awesome way to check on hearing and vision for that age group.
Okay.
And it's also going to be really fun for kids. So the parents are kind of going over and getting all this stuff done, and that's really great because they can get it done quickly and all in one place. And then for the kids, they just think of it as a fun fair because there's all these different activities, and they can get their face painted while the parents talking, and they can we'll have some different equipment there, and there's all kinds of fun learning games. And then every child gets a door prize to take home. So they get to choose their door prize at the end, which is really fun. So, you know, from the kids' point of view, it's a fun fair. From the parents' point of view, it's a really easy way to get all this stuff accomplished in a really quick way. You know, they can just kind of come in, swoop through, and pick up their prize on the way out. So, again, it's 4:30 to 6:30 this Thursday at the Valley Public Library. And I wanted to mention, you know, this is a big emphasis for signing up for kindergarten, but it's also if your child's turning 3 by September 1st, this is a really big event for 3-year-olds as well and 4-year-olds, because the Montessori Borealis Children's House, that's operated by the Juneau School District, is accepting enrollments, and they actually have an open house coming up next week too, April 12th. But that is a great program that's a full day from 7:30 in the morning till 5:30 for 3- and 4-year-olds. And if the child's on child care assistance, there's also additional tuition scholarships, so it's really a really affordable option for parents in Juneau. And then there's Head Start programs that will be there at the fair, and they will be enrolling kids in Head Start because it's like, oh, it seems like September is so far away, but it's actually now is the time to be getting signed up because those spaces go pretty quickly. So it's really important to sign up now. And then also the school district has their integrated preschools, which people can sign up for right now as well. So those are all really good options for 3- and 4-year-olds, as well as the kindergarten readiness.
Joy, you've been ED of AEYC for 20 years, right?
20 years! And, you know, there's just always more. There's about 2,000 kids under age 5 in Juneau, and there's just a lot to do to keep up with them and keep growing our support for those families.
At a fair like this, what would you say surprises parents the most? What's a resource maybe they don't know about or are glad to learn about?
Well, we have a lot of families in Juneau are on the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, and so they will already be receiving a monthly bulletin that comes with them. So I think about 70% of the kids in Juneau are enrolled, and that's you know, there's a monthly bulletin that has just all kinds of things that are going on. For, you know, example, in Dads and Children's Playgroup, and the this Friday there's a Go Blue rally at the Capitol steps from noon to 1. Everyone's to wear blue for Go Blue Friday, and that's Child Abuse Prevention Month celebration. And there's some family nights at the Diamond Park Field House that happen, Turf for Tots. There's just so much going on. I think people are really surprised at how much is available in Juneau.
Sure. Yeah. Claire, speaking of, I know you're going to do immunizations, but you also mentioned vision and hearing tests. Why is that important for kids at that age?
Vision and hearing is particularly important, as some kids might not present as needing glasses, or they might not necessarily present as, oh, my child might, you know, have difficulty hearing. So we have the capacity to do really high-level fun screening. I would say that the vision screening is one of my greatest honors, and it's really fun. So it's a good way to identify, hey, does my kiddo maybe need glasses? And then we can help get them set up so that later, as sometimes is the case for me, like I'll meet a seven-year-old and they're struggling with school and we can't figure out why. Oh, wow, they need glasses, and everything comes together. So it's important to check on hearing and vision so that we can get kids set up with all of the tools they need.
What's neat about the Flying Lions is you have this really great optical machine that it doesn't rely on the child, because my son cheated on these tests. You know, he would just like be listening ahead, and he would just trying to pass the test. So we didn't know that he had a vision problem until he was like fourth or fifth grade, and then he puts the glasses on. He's like, oh wow, trees, you know, eagles. I didn't know what you're talking about before. So you know, it's what their Flying Lions Club has is, you know, it kind of takes a picture of their eye. And then so they can refer them to, you know, further testing if it comes out. So they can actually test babies. So it's really great to have them in town. And they're this great group of volunteers. They show up every year. They're just, like, really friendly. And it's really fun for, you know, easy for the kids. So
is there a cost for the testing?
No cost. So it's. We're hoping to invite everyone, and it's the free early learning fair. So free games, free great conversations, free everything. So we'd just love to see families.
Yeah, and Claire, one more question about immunizations. Before the show, there's a lot of controversy, I think, it seems like, in America these days about immunizations. What do you tell parents who are concerned about them?
I'm very eager with every family I work with just to kind of have a conversation and talk with families and meet them where they're at. So regardless of, you know, what you'd like to do with your family and what's best for you and your kiddos, we're here to have conversations and provide good information so that you can make your own decision, but that we can help give you the best information about vaccines and help foster that program. So I often will work with families sometimes on their own schedule and meet them where they're at. And we're just eager to kind of meet with families and regardless. So, yeah.
Okay. So this is the free early learning fair this Thursday, April 6th from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Valley Public Library. Joy, if somebody wants more info, where should they go?
They should call us at 789-1235. Or they can search for www.aeyc-sca.org. And just so that you know, there's this stuff for infants and toddlers, too. I wanted to mention one more thing, that the Circles of Security parenting classes are coming up. So we have two sessions starting, and these are really popular, especially for parents of infants and toddlers. And they're just a six-week series, and we have two sessions coming up, so they should call about those, too. So it's 789-1235.
All right, Joy Lyon, she's the ED of AEYC, and Claire Geldof, a nurse at the Juneau Public Health Center. Thank you all for coming into the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add, anything we're missing?
Just a thank you, and hope to see everybody tomorrow. I mean, Thursday.
Thursday. Happy Folk Fest, everyone. Take care. Be well.
I don't want, all it does is hover and taunt, reminding me what I used to be, what I may never be again. Turns out what I'm good at doing is making something out of the ruin of all this wasted space that can never be replaced. Learn it all again tomorrow. Learn it all again tomorrow. Nothing I have you can borrow or steal. Yes, I think we have.
wreck than I seem to be today. I'm usually this way. Learn it all again tomorrow. Learn it all again tomorrow. Nothing I have you can't borrow or see. Yes, I think we have a deal. I wish every holiday only took an hour. That I'm not just like the people I resent. I wish someday I could truly be empowered to say exactly what it is I meant. All I have that's in abundance is my perpetual redundance. It's hard for me to say. I face it every day. Learn it all again tomorrow. Learn it all again tomorrow. Nothing I have you can't borrow or steal. Learn it all again tomorrow. Learn it all again tomorrow. Nothing I have you can't borrow or steal. Yes, I think we have a deal.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 3rd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 22 minutes after the hour. In the studio now is Kristen Price. She's part of JAM, or Juno Alaska Music Matters, and we're here to talk about the Disney Sing-Along Fundraising Dinner in a couple weeks on April 14th. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So let's start with JAM, Juno Alaska Music Matters. Tell us about it.
So Juno Alaska Music Matters is the after-school, actually it's in schools too. They teach the kindergartners to play the violin, and then when they reach second grade, they can participate in the after-school club time, and they get string instruction, so they can play violin or they can do viola, cello, and they get, you know, special instruction time with that. They have little orchestra time. There's also other class options. There's ukulele and songwriting, depending on which school you're at. There's a variety of options where they can participate.
So JAM is a nonprofit then?
It is. Mm-hmm.
And what inspired its inception?
Lori Hagee is the driving force. She is a whirlwind of a woman, and there's a program called El Sistema, which I'm not terribly familiar with, but she is, and it's inspired off of that. And it's really teaching kids a lot of skills through music, skills like, you know, teamwork and grit and all these persistence and all these wonderful skills that we need to live in the world, and they're getting them through music.
Okay, that sounds like a lot of fun. And so I'm sure getting those instruments and everything else is not cheap, so you have this fundraising dinner. It's a week from this Friday at the Jack. It's from 5 to 7, it looks like.
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And a Disney sing-along. How's that work?
Yeah, so it's just really fun. It's going to be a concert, and Jocelyn Miles is kind of the brains and energy behind that. And she cooked up this idea to have a Disney sing-along concert. And so she got all her friends together and all local musicians and talent and she said, pick a Disney song. And so everybody's going to do Disney songs. And of course, you know, everybody loves to sing along with Disney songs. So people will be invited to sing along.
Any guesses on what may be a few favorites?
I think Jocelyn is going to do Poor Unfortunate Souls from The Little Mermaid. Yeah, so I'm not sure what everybody else is going to do.
Okay, so the sing-along is part of this fundraiser. Anything else people can expect there on that Friday?
Yeah, so there's a spaghetti dinner, which is so the dinner starts at 5, and the concert is going to start at 5:30. And so it's $10 for adults and $5 for kids for the dinner. And then there's also, we're also asking a suggested donation of $15 for the concert. And there's supposed to also be a dessert auction. So there's going to be all sorts of little extra things going on too. So yeah.
Okay. This sounds like a lot of fun. Does JAM, Juneau Alaska Music Matters, do you ever happen to have concerts, or is this mostly something that happens in the schools?
We do have concerts. I know the kids have concerts in their schools, of course, but there's also, I know they play at the Community Day at UAS, and they'll probably be in the Folk Festival. So they do perform at various functions around town.
Okay. Let's see. So this is Friday, April 14th from 5 to 7 at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Disney sing-along for the JAM, Juneau Alaska Music Matters. If people want more information, Kristen, where should they get it?
You can call me at 957-0099, or you can go on the JAM website. There's also a GoFundMe for Juneau Alaska Music Matters, so you can Google that. And there's a web. Did you mention the website?
You did, but what's the site address? It's okay. Just Google JAM.
Yeah.
All right, Kristen, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Just come and have a lot of, it's going to be fun, and we hope to see you there.
All right. Thank you so much.
This is Bird Note. White-throated sparrows are shy birds, but on warm days in late winter and early spring, the spirit comes upon them and the thickets erupt into song. Those cheerful whistles are easily set to human words. Old Sam Peabody, Peabody, Peabody. Or, oh, sweet Canada, Canada, Canada. But something has changed since those classic memory aids were coined. Listen to this recording made in the early 1950s. This song begins with two long, pure notes, Old Sam, Oh Sweet, and concludes with three triplet groups. Now listen to this, recorded 60 years later. Hear the difference? It is very subtle. This bird sings a simpler, shorter song with an abbreviated ending. In the 1920s, the white-throated sparrow's longer song was the most common. But bird song, like human language, changes. By the 1960s, it had become extremely rare. Researchers suggested that the classic song had died out to be replaced by the shorter version. Listen in city parks, suburban backyards, open woods, and see what the birds in your neighborhood are saying. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hello, this is Stephen Pfister, Facility Manager at Centennial Hall, part of the CBJ Parks and Recreation. Centennial Hall, Juneau's convention center, located in the heart of downtown's Willoughby District, is an important economic generator in our community, hosting a variety of events with over 80,000 people attending each year. Events include the Alaska Folk Festival, Celebration, and a variety of conventions, conferences, and fundraisers. For more information, call 586-5283 or visit our website at centennialhall.net.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, April 3rd. It's about 30 minutes after the hour. And now for our monthly update with the Juneau Police Department, we have Lieutenant Campbell in the studio. Lieutenant Campbell, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. Lieutenant, how long have you been with the Juneau Police Department? Remind me.
Last Saturday was my 22-year anniversary.
Oh, wow.
So April Fool's Day.
Okay.
Not sure if the joke's on me or the city, but
22.
It's definitely easy to remember.
And as lieutenant, what keeps you busy every day?
Well, I'm the administration lieutenant.
Okay.
And we have three lieutenants at JPD. One oversees patrol, one oversees the investigations unit, and then the admin lieutenant with me kind of does everything else. So I'm in charge of recruitment, all internal affairs investigations, the annual report, accreditation, training, those types of things. And one of the things that I've kind of noticed is whenever I'm out and about and kind of talking to people, or if I'm at the university taking a class or something, the one thing that seems to be on everyone's minds is the burglary rate that we're dealing with. We do know that the rate has increased over the last 2 years. But I just started putting together the statistics for last year's annual report. We always put the annual report out sometime in the spring. And so the 2017 annual report will be dealing with 2016 statistics. So it's always kind of like a year behind. So if you go into the on the Juneau Police Department and onto our website, all the annual reports back to 2008 are listed on there. So if you see the 2016 annual report, it's actually dealing with 2015 numbers. Sure. And we give it a five-year a rotation or a five-year window that we view. And I just got the numbers back about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. They're still preliminary. I don't think they're going to change very much, though, however. And so normally we see about 100 burglaries a year. In 2012, 13, and 14, we were right around the 100 mark. And then last year we had a really large increase in burglaries. We hit 169.
Wow.
So it was a really large increase. And the year, this last year, 2016, when we got the numbers back, it has increased again rather dramatically. Last year, the preliminary report is we had 310 burglaries in the city. So that's an 84% increase over 2015, which was our high year mark. So I think that it's when I get asked about it a lot, it makes sense, because I think there's a lot of people out there that are either being victimized or knows people that are victimized. So it's a really personal type of a crime, and people are trying to figure out, what can they do to help, and what are we doing about it as well.
And what are you guys thinking is the cause for the spike?
It's always difficult to say what is the one cause. I don't think we're dealing with one person that is. I think we have several people or several groups of people that are out there doing it. But if you absolutely forced me to say what is the cause of this, I don't think you'd get much pushback if you said it was people with addiction problems are committing burglaries to feed their addiction. There's the whole issue of, well, what are we going to do in order to curb the addiction to kind of deal with the underlying cause, of the burglary. But, if someone's got a drug addiction, it doesn't feel any less personal if you get burglarized and your property gets stolen.
And just to be clear, a burglary is something that happens without weapons and without interaction with the people. Can you explain that to us?
Sure, sure. Basically, what a burglary is most people think it's property related, but it doesn't necessarily have to be property related. Burglary basically means if you enter a place, typically a dwelling, with the intent to commit a crime. All right. So if somebody came in here with the intent of assaulting you, they committed a burglary because they entered a private place, and they committed a crime, which was the assault or whatever. The vast, vast majority of the burglaries are property related, where somebody will, break into a place and they will try to steal something. And that stealing is the underlying crime that causes a burglary. People oftentimes misuse the word robbery, and robbery is when you, by force or intimidation, take something from another person. So people are like, oh, I've been robbed. Well, no, you've been burgled. But it doesn't sound quite so good. But some of the trends that have always been around that are holding true today is, typically speaking, residential burglaries happen during the daytime. And typically speaking, commercial burglaries happen at night. Well, why is that? It's because the burglars are doing a very basic version of a cost-benefit analysis, and they're figuring, hey, if I burglarize someplace when there's nobody there, the likelihood of me being caught is decreased. So most people during the daytime are either at school or at work, and most businesses are usually closed and empty at nighttime. So that's when you see those trends taking place.
I'm sure it varies widely, but what are they after for the most part? What's the easiest thing to liquidate in Juneau?
And liquidate is the right word, because what you don't see, and you see it periodically, but it's not the norm. What you don't see are people stealing the 60-inch LCD TVs, because what are you going to do with a 60-inch TV here? And, their serial number, things of that line. So the big the big items that people burglarize are typically expensive, small items like jewelry, cash, obviously, it gets looked for, and firearms. There is a black market for firearms in this town. And then consumables like alcohol or prescription medication. Those probably cover the vast majority of the things that are stolen here. Something that someone could easily, you know, put in, you know, their pocket or a pillowcase or something, and then, you know, easily either consume it or dispose it or turn it really quickly. You don't see a whole lot of the, and it's because of our isolation. You don't see the TVs and those types of things stolen very often.
Is there typically property damage?
Quite often, because even if people are locking their doors, you know, it doesn't take much to kick in a door. But it's interesting you say it's the property damage, because that leads you to the forced entry portion of it. And one of the things that we've done, there's three things that we've been looking at to try to address this issue of the burglary increase. One of them is we've instituted a geographic policing model. And we can talk more about that in a little bit. We have an offender based model that we're dealing with as well. And then we also have an officer by the name of Ken Cologne, who has been trained to do what's referred to as a SEPTED review. SEPTED is an acronym. It stands for Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. And it's been around a long time. When I got my undergraduate degree in the early 90s, I took a crime prevention class, and I did a term paper on SEPTED. So it's nothing new. But SEPTED deals with things like, you know, lighting, natural surveillance, access controls, and then target hardening deals with, you know, security systems and bolt locks, and they're different. They work hand in hand, but they're different concepts. Because nobody wants to live have the fortress mentality where they got, you know, bars on their windows and it's you know, locks galore and whatnot. So the two work together. But what Officer Cologne will do is he will come out to either your business or your residence, and he will do a very extensive walkthrough, and he'll look at what can you do to help make your resident or your business less likely to be victimized. And he did a review of KTOO, I think, a summer and a half ago.
That's
and,
right.
And did and got some real, real good feedback. And the thing about the review is you can do it or you cannot do it, or you can do part of it or not of it. It's really what fits for the individual. But they've been wildly successful. He did more than 50 SEPTED reviews last year alone. He and I gave a presentation at the university in November, where we invite the public to come in to learn about target hardening and SEPTED principles. So we're trying to basically give people the actionable tools that will make them less likely to be a victim of a burglary. All right?
I'm sure there's a lot to this as well, but
absolutely.
What are a few things that you're finding effective deterrents?
Natural surveillance is probably one of the big things. And natural surveillance is somebody likely to see what's going on? All right. So, lighting is a good thing. You know, motion sensors, lighting is a good thing. Keeping your shrubs, your trees trimmed in such a way to where if somebody is at your front door, other people see it. There's been a lot of studies that are done that people behave differently when they think they're being watched. Even if like the honor system candy bar bin at the office, you know, hey, leave a dollar, take a candy bar kind of thing, you know, there have been studies that have shown that if you just put a pair of googly eyes on the little front of the box there, it increases the amount of times that people put money into it, because people behave differently when they're watched. So that is something. Natural surveillance is an easy one. Keep things, you know, trimmed back. Keep your valuables, you know, out of sight. If you know, don't leave your purse or a laptop computer in your car. You know, keep your car locked. Have your windows, you know, your shades drawn. Keep your doors locked. You'd be surprised how many burglaries we go to where the people had locks, they didn't use them. You know, and then security systems is kind of like the next evolution in there. We're seeing a lot more security systems in town, a lot more systems where people can access cameras in their homes over their phone so they can monitor what's going on or be notified when things are happening. A couple of burglars just this last fall, got caught because a homeowner out the road had a camera security system and saw the burglars in action and called the police, and we were able to catch them. So it's really a powerful thing. But again, it's individual what the person wants.
Okay. Interesting. Was it Lieutenant Cologne?
Officer
Cologne.
Yeah.
If somebody wanted to set up a meeting with him, how do they do
they
that?
They can find him online. Everyone at the police department's email is online, or they can call the main police department number, which is 586-0600, and ask to talk to Officer Cologne. Another thing that I just want to throw out there real quick is we do have a thing called geographical policing, where we have five different patrol teams. The city has been divided up into five different areas. Each patrol team has been given an area that they are supposed to be working with and know the citizens, because in order to solve this issue, it really has to be a joint effort between the community and the police. We really encourage neighborhood watch programs, whether someone wants to actually have a physical neighborhood watch or whether they want to do it more online through like Nextdoor or Facebook. And what will happen is you can go online, find out which team of officers has your neighborhood, which sergeant is in control of that team. You can contact that sergeant, and the sergeant will come out and give a talk on community policing. You know, they'll give you advice on writing your cell numbers and watching out for each other, and it's a really, really good program, and we just put up on the website where the areas are and which teams are responsible for those areas.
Thinking of those areas, do you feel comfortable sharing which area is having the most of these burglaries?
It's kind of hard to say. We haven't really run it as far as that goes, but tomorrow night I'm going to Douglas because the Douglas Neighborhood Association is having a meeting. And one thing that Chief Johnson has done is he's had when the tour season is in place, he was having some stats run. So I haven't run anything new, but I looked at what he had just from the just for the tourist. The problem with the way it was broken down is that it doesn't take population into consideration. So the areas were like downtown, Douglas, Lemon Creek, you know, the Menhall Valley was split into, and then out the road. Well, obviously out the road has less incidences than anywhere else, but they also have less population.
Sure.
The area that had the highest number of incidents, and I'm not talking about specific burglars, I'm talking about just incidents as an aggregate, as a whole, was downtown Juneau. That's also where the most dense population is as well.
You mentioned a meeting tomorrow in Douglas?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, where is that going to be?
It's going to be at the library. I hope I'm not stealing their thunder or anything, but there was some concerns about, rumors that the DOC was going to put in some sort of testing facility or something in the area, so the neighbors got a little bit upset. Apparently they have monthly meetings, and they invited us to come talk, so I'm going to be there. Someone from DOT is going to be there, and it's for the Douglas Neighborhood Association, and it's at the library at 6 p.m.
Okay. If somebody wants to get a hold of their geographical team, the police team, what's the best way to do that?
Go directly to the sergeant, and the way to do that is if you go online to juneaupolice.org and you pull it up, you'll see a really nice picture of a police car, and then above the police car are different tabs. The tab on your very far right says Contact Us, and if you click under the Contact Us, one of the drop-downs is entitled, I think it's like Neighborhood Policing or something along that line, and in there it shows you the maps of Juneau. It shows you how the areas are broken down, which sergeant is controlling them, and there's an email thing we can talk directly to that team.
That sounds good. We have a little extra time. Lieutenant Campbell, when you first came on the show, you mentioned that you're in charge of recruitment. Is that true?
Yeah.
I've always
I'm not in charge of it.
I've always wondered, where does Juneau sort of stack up in the recruitment sort of nationwide? Is it a neat place to come for police officers? I mean, you've been here 22 years now, right?
I relocated from Anchorage.
Oh, okay.
And I would like to think it is if a person wants to become a police officer, I think it's really a two-part question. The first question is, in general, do you want to be in law enforcement? Because it's a lifestyle choice. You know, weekends, nights, holidays, missing, you know, baseball games for your kids, things on that line. So you really have, you know, a lot of stress. You know, some people will dislike you just because of the uniform you have on. Some people will love you just because of the uniform you have on. So it truly is a lifestyle choice. So that's the first question. The next question is, okay, I do want to be a police officer. Where do I want to work? Because there's a vast difference between a large metropolitan city like New York City or, you know, a town like Juneau. State is different from municipal. Feds is different from state. I'm sure that being an ICE agent on the border is a lot different than being a police officer in Juneau, but we're all law enforcement, you know. So the next question is, what fits best with you? My desire to come to a small town was that I grew up in Fairbanks, and I wanted to feel like I could come to a place where I would make a difference. I don't know how, you know, 40,000 police officers in New York City, I don't know how you really make a large impact on the city as a whole. So I wanted to come to a place that was smaller, where I had a more sense of idea what my kids were doing and where they were going and stuff. And Gino has just been so gracious. My wife and kids, we love it here. I don't plan on leaving. It's a good town. And as far as numbers go, a couple of years ago, there was a nationwide dip in police officers. It's still going on. We were at a pretty severe crisis level just a couple years ago where we had 12 vacancies, which is pretty huge when you figure we've only got 55 or 57 if you include the airport, and we have five officers out there. So we were at about 20% vacancy rate, which is huge. Today we have three. I was running some of the numbers for recruitment at the time, and when I ran the numbers, the question was, okay, why aren't people making it through our process? It's a very difficult process. You have aptitude testing, physical strength and agility testing, a polygraph, a background, an oral board, psych testing, because there's a tremendous amount of power that comes along with being a police officer. And we want to make sure you get the right person in the door at the very, very beginning. Chief Johnson always says that, one of his favorite quotes is from Abraham Lincoln that says, nearly all man can handle adversity. If you really want to test a man's character, give him power. And that's kind of what we're doing when we make someone a police officer. So I was like, where are people falling off? Where are they having an issue? And the biggest issue was people were pulling themselves out of the program. 37% of the people that didn't, we had over 100 people and 8 people got hired. We had like basically 8% hire rate. And when we factored those people out, we ended up going up to a 12% hire rate. So the decision was made about two and a half, three years ago that we were going to focus our recruitment on local and regional advertising. So we really increased our advertising, like at the movie theaters and going to job fairs, and we really pressed it hard for about 2 years. I'd like to say that it was successful, because now we're down to just three, and we have a hiring process that's in place where a lot of people are about to go through background. So I think we're doing pretty darn good right now.
I'm sure this question varies again, sure. But if a person here in Juneau wanted to become a police officer, about how long does that process take?
About 6 months to go through the hiring process. And the reason why is because I'm assuming you're talking to someone that doesn't have law enforcement experience, all right? If it's a lateral where you're already a certified officer, it's much quicker. The problem is that if you're not already an existing police officer that is certified with the state of Alaska, you have to go to the Public Safety Academy. Right now that's in Sitka, and they hold two academies a year. One starts in February, and one starts roughly in end of July, August-ish. So we time our process where, again, aptitude test, physical strength, agility test, oral board, polygraph, psych. I mean, there's everything is its own process. You can't move on to the next until you finish the first one. So we time it so that we can hire the person roughly 4 to 5 weeks before the academy starts. And that way we can put them through a mini academy. We can make sure they qualify with their firearm. We can give them arrest control tactics. They spend a whole day with me on laws of arrest. I say bring a lot of coffee. I like it, but I know it can be kind of a dry subject. We do search and seizure. We do a whole bunch of stuff in-house because we want them, when they go to the academy, be as successful as possible. The academy is, 15 weeks long. It's a live-in academy where they kind of own you when you're over there, and you have night practices and weakness practices. And then when you come back, we have a 14-week field training program that a person has to successfully complete. So from the time they get sworn in to the time when they're a standalone badge-carrying person, you're talking just shy of a year, usually like 10, 11 months. So it's quite the commitment.
Okay. Well, I think we covered quite a few things today, Lieutenant Campbell. That's great. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about?
The only thing I'd like to add, since we did talk about recruitment, is, again, those first two questions. Do you want to be a police officer in general? If so, where? If you are out there and you're thinking, gee, I might want to be a police officer, the one thing that you can do is go on a ride-along with us. All right. When I was getting my undergraduate degree, I kept vacillating. Do I want to be an attorney? Do I want to be in law enforcement? Attorney, cop. I couldn't figure it out until I went on a ride-along with a friend of mine who was a police officer with Anchorage PD. And once I actually saw it, because TV is not police work, once I actually saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, this is cool. I'm going to be a police officer. And the thought of being an attorney just never entered my mind again. So we do 4-hour ride-alongs. You can do it once every 6 months. You do have to fill out a form that you can get from the chief's secretary. We do a background search. That's a very, very basic background search. It takes a couple of days to get through that because we don't want people of the criminal milieu to come in and kind of learn what we're doing. So we have to make sure that you're kind of a stand-up person. And then you you go out. Usually, I recommend Friday or Saturday night because that's when most things are happening. Go spend 4 hours running around with a cop and seeing firsthand what it is that they're dealing with and what their thought process is and how they're thinking. And there's nothing better to determine whether that's something that you'd like to do than go on a ride along.
All right, Lieutenant Campbell, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It was a pleasure.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 3rd of April, 2017. It's the birthday of the first American author to make a living by writing. Washington Irving, born New York City, 1783, gave us the story of Rip Van Winkle, about a man who tries to get away from his nagging wife, taking a nap in the woods, and he wakes up 20 years later to a greatly changed world. Also gave us the legend of Sleepy Hollow and the Headless Horseman. It's the birthday of Herb Cain, born in Sacramento, 1916, columnist for many, many years for the San Francisco Chronicle. Wrote his column 6 days a week from 1938 to 1991. Wrote in the morning, hung out in a bar or cafe in the afternoon, and went off to big events in the evening. Collected his columns in two books, Baghdad by the Bay and Don't Call It Frisco. It's the birthday of the British primatologist Dr. Jane Goodall, born in London, 1934. She was interested in animals from a very young age. Her parents one day could not find her. They looked all over, called the police, and a few hours later discovered that she had been in the family's backyard chicken coop. She was watching a hen lay an egg. Jane Goodall traveled to Tanzania in 1960. She was just 26 years old. She went to study chimpanzees. She went off to Gombe Stream National Park, and she spent many months establishing herself as a non-threatening presence among them. She offered bananas to them every day. She climbed trees with them. She mimicked their behaviors. She sampled their foods. She was the first to observe that chimpanzees do eat meat and that they make and they use their own tools. She wrote her first book for a popular audience, My Friends the Wild Chimpanzees, came out in 1970. Still works as a human rights activist. It's the birthday of the great nature writer John Burroughs, born near Roxbury, New York, 1837. And it's the birthday of Sandra Keith Boynton, born in Orange, New Jersey, 1953, author of children's books, including Hippos Go Berserk, Chocolate, The Consuming Passion, and most recently, Dinosaur Dance. She was also a designer of greeting cards. She designed a happy birthday card with a hippopotamus, a bird, and two sheep on it that said, Hippo Birdie to Use, which sold 10 million copies. Here's a poem for today by Jay Hoppler. Beauty is a real thing, I've seen it. If only those parakeets would settle a little nearer to where I'm sitting instead of at the tops of far-off trees, this morning would be so much more remarkable. One could watch the blackbirds, I suppose, peck their ways like Oxford dons across the flagstone paths and lawns, or the swallows, or the sparrows, or the crows, but those birds are so plain, so painfully available. No, only those parakeets will do, and they will not do what I want them to. In this, they are like everything else in the world, every beautiful thing. A poem by Jay Hoppler, Beauty is a Real Thing, I've Seen It, from the Abridged History of Rainfall, published by McSweeney's Poetry Series and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Journal Afternoon here on Monday, April 3rd. It's about 5 minutes till the top of the hour. Here are the Murphy Beds. They are the guest artists for the Alaska Folk Festival, which begins tonight at 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Great, free. Go down and check it out. But if you can't make it to the hall tonight, you can also go to any of our websites here in Juneau Public Media, KTOO.org or KRNN or KXLL. And you can click on the button to stream and listen to the Folk Fest. Again, here are the Murphy Beds.
I left my native home, and over to old Scotland I started out to roam. As I walked down through Bishopstown seeking for employ, a ganger there he knew by me I was a navvy boy. Get employed for lodging I did seek. It happened to be that very night that the...
And you can catch the Murphy Beds at 8 o'clock on Thursday for their first set, and they'll be playing after that as well. Let's see, Juneau Afternoon tomorrow will be your host again, and we'll get an update on the library activities. We'll also get details on First Friday at the Juneau Douglas City Museum. We'll learn about the Amalga Distillery and talk with guitar maker George Gress. And Cynthia McFeeters will update us on what's happening with the Juneau Community Charter School.
You should wed a navvy boy, the wide world far to range. For navvies, they are rambling boys and have but little...
Taking a look at the forecast, it's currently 46 degrees at the Juneau International Airport. And the forecast for tonight calls for snow mainly after 4 a.m. and cloudy with a low around 34. Chance of precip is 60%. Little or no snow accumulation is expected. Tomorrow, snow is likely possibly mixed with rain before 7. Then a chance of rain. Cloudy with a high near 50. Chance of precip is 60%, and again, little or no snow accumulation is expected. Going into Wednesday, the forecast just calls for rain. High near 44, and the chance of precipitation is 90%. Thank you for tuning in to A Juneau Afternoon.
Said the daughter to her mother, "You shall not run them down, for my father was a navvy